in. I'm recording.
Okay.
Ready or not, Rob? We're falling in.
Sounds good. Into the breach.
This is something I want to try doing more of just for a little while, see if it works, is trying to play with our lack of preparedness in a way. Not to say that we come in and are being callous or cavalier about what we're talking about, but trusting ourselves a little bit to be able to navigate the waters, even if we haven't had like a huge discussion beforehand of what we're going to do, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
It's like you do, we could only use Karate Kid as our analogies. You do so much sand on the floor and then it becomes muscle memory and you got to put it to the test. You can't just keep sanding that floor forever.
Quite true, man. Although it does feel safe. I mean, when you get that familiar problem that you're tackling,
yeah,
and you remember well enough that there was a time before you were effective at tackling it. And this does feel familiar and good.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, why mess with it?
Because that's how things stay interesting. You know, but on the other hand, you know, it's like I'm running into this right now with a couple classes that I'm teaching where every term, whatever you want to call it, semester, term, whatever, I'm dealing with a weird combination of kids who've taken my class before and then a couple new kids. And so the dynamic is forever changing in my classrooms. And so that means that the first 3 weeks of any new class I'm teaching, I'm figuring out how I'm going to deal with these kids. And I had a teenager in my classroom this last week say to me, I was assigning quote unquote homework. My homework is always awesome homework. Like, go home, pick out a graphic novel that you really love and come back to class next week and be prepared to talk about it, right? And all, and don't worry about writing anything down. I'll guide the conversation. You know, I'll ask you good questions to figure out why you love this graphic novel so much. And the whole thing is, you know, to demonstrate to them how to identify and analyze stuff that they like so they can incorporate bits of that into their work, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they say, well, I like the way this is drawn or that is drawn. Oh, well, you're noticing this about this art. Well, maybe you like this. And I point out what the artist is actually doing anyway. Well, I say this. I'm like, okay, so we got some homework for this week, and I tell them what the assignment is, and this girl looks me dead in the eye and says, I'm not doing that. And this is at an art center. This is not a graded class. What do you respond to that with? You know, she was being outwardly defiant, like, no, that's just not happening. That's not happening today. That's like 13-year-old girl, you know? Mm-hmm. So I got to figure this out, you know? And like, what are my choices? My choices are to either go like, oh, teenagers, right? You know, you know what I'm saying? Or is it, how can I win this kid over? How can I get this kid to say hooray when I say there's something to do at home this week, right? That's how it stays interesting. You either get to say how interesting or you get to say boo. I oscillate between both. But anyway, my big point is that I'm a big fan of shaking the bottle every once in a while. Stirring the pot.
Yeah, I'm just writing down how interesting or buh is that's an interesting yin yang kind of thing that I could see that being on a t-shirt.
Well, I think Seth Godin actually, I think it was him. He said, like, you know, whenever you encounter a problem, can you condition yourself to say how interesting? So I may have lifted that from him, or at least, you know, I remember reading that in one of his little things, a couple years ago. But yeah. I mean, I think that's the two things that I'm always facing whenever I'm dealing with a difficult situation. And whenever I force myself to say how interesting, it's a way to remind myself that I'm dealing with human beings, and you know, it's time to engage like a human being and not engage like I was talking with this was a totally different time in my life when I was first starting teaching, but I was talking with a teacher who said, you know, it's like, yeah, the kids weren't into it today, so I just gave them kind of something to do. And I remember being stricken with horror by that thought. But, you know, when you're in like an 8-week course and there's a lot of factors involved, like the sun is shining, the kids don't want to sit down, it's right after lunch or it's almost spring break and whatever, I can see somebody defaulting to that position because it's exhausting to have to try to manage that. But what I try to do 99% of the time is engage with how interesting and try to do something a little bit different. And the worst that can happen is I could fail miserably and a bunch of kids think I'm lame. Oh, my gosh. Like, I haven't been dealing with that all my life.
So, I mean, it helps if you want to be adventurous to be, you know, just get used to the pain.
At the worst, you've got a funny story, you know? Or at least like a moderately interesting story. So, okay. You know, we didn't introduce ourselves. I'm Jersey.
Hey, Jersey. I'm Rob Stenzinger.
And this is the Lean Into Art cast where we talk about art, art lifestyle, the way we think about art, storytelling, and pretty much anything that a visual storyteller thinks about or experiences, or by our, in my opinion, what we should be thinking about and struggling with,
yeah, exactly. I mean, this really isn't about like, well, what pen do you buy, or do you have that quick fix solution for something? I mean, we may come across we do actually come across tips now and then in a certain context,
right? But this is critical, though.
Yeah, it's not really our typical goal. I mean, it's more about representing the ideas that, well, artists can be creative problem solvers and thinking across a wider range of disciplines than necessarily are often categorized as like, well, yeah, that artists do that. Like, for instance, today's topic is partially about spreadsheets.
You're going to give me some tips on how to manage my spreadsheets, Rob? Whether I should use, I'm really torn on this. Should I use Excel? Should I use Numbers? Or should I use Google Docs? When I'm highlighting my cells, I mean, should I make them green, yellow? How do I do, a split cell within, you know, a row or a column?
Sit back. I've got 45 minutes ready right here on how to format a cell.
Thank God I don't have to think anymore. Awesome.
Yep. Already pre-chewed, delivered to your door.
Okay. So yes, here's a great way to think about it is like what we try to achieve is the kind of conversations that you just hear artists having in a studio, right?
Yeah.
But not the ones where it's like, can you imagine her head on her body? Not that kind of discussion between fellas, but more of the philosophical discussions that artists find themselves having every once in a while and trying to figure this thing out as they go and, you know, reflecting on it. Okay, there's the tagline. Lean into art. Let's lean into it. What you want to talk about spreadsheets? What do you want to talk about spreadsheets for, Rob?
A little bit of a psych out. I was actually thinking about making decisions, and I do actually use spreadsheets to help out with that.
You're a big fan of creating lists, creating visualizations of where things can go.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen some of your workshop preparations, how you get ready for a workshop and you do the whole, what do they call that? Mind mapping?
Yep. I do mind mapping. I do a lot of sketching.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so try to find ways to visually represent topics. And so you have things like mind maps. So you can create relationships among ideas. And there's something about seeing ideas sit amongst one another and get grouped in different ways that, well, it gives them context. And all of a sudden you start to categorize this group as something new, realizing like, oh, I need this, you know, I really need the topic of addressing handling user input. And what's that like as far as, what's this concept of events and stuff in this game development class? So and all of a sudden, well, there you go. Now I'm helping evolve and learn about the thing that I'm trying to work through.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's a way of forcing yourself to back out away from, you know, like the minutia of the idea and look at it as a big picture kind of thing. Get 1,000 feet away from it and sort of like, you know, find out where the connections lie without going through. Because like when you're thinking, when you're chewing on, at least for me, I can only speak for myself because that's the only head I've ever resided in, is when I'm crunching on an idea, it sometimes can feel very linear. it's this leads me to this, which leads me to this, which leads me to this, which leads me to this. Like when you're having a conversation and suddenly you're talking about shoelaces and you're like, how did I get to shoelaces? We started out talking about the circus and you start to backtrack through your conversation. Have you ever done this? Or you backtrack through your conversation to figure out how the heck you got to shoelaces? That's how like crunching on ideas can sometimes feel for me. So, you know, throwing it on paper, sketching it out can be useful for that. So, okay, why? I mean, well, I'll just go ahead and play this card and see where you run with it. You have to make a lot of really big decisions lately. You know,
everyone does though, right? I mean, so
nope,
sure.
Nope. You are alone and special. Your pain is a pain that no one else has ever felt. Just like two young lovers who are experiencing the greatest love that no lovers have ever loved. That is your pain, Rob.
Boy, have I been that young man. I have been that young man. All right.
I was totally that guy too.
Yeah. And that's how you got me thrown off thinking about how much of a Yahoo I was. All right.
Forgive yourself for your Yahoo-ness for crying out loud. The worst thing you can do is sit around and beat yourself up about something stupid you did when you were 17, right?
Yep. Totally agree. I am over it now. So let's see. Life decisions.
I've
indirectly mentioned a few different things on social networks about researching like next job opportunity things. And boy, those are really rich and complex scenarios. Thinking a few years back, buying a house. And then like a couple weekends ago, buying a car.
Yeah.
And actually all of these things, I use this similar kind of technique.
I have a couple in-laws, I won't say which ones, but they're the folks who go to the car dealership. And when the dealer says, this one is the best one. You see that guy over there? He's going to buy it. He's going to buy it unless you buy it. And they totally fall for that every time. And then the next 3 months is me listening to them justify their purchase and try to sell me on why they bought this thing until I say, that was a great decision you made. You know, they just will not let, you know the person I'm talking about, right?
That's the other method. And my other method is don't worry about it.
Yeah.
Just do it.
But those are good examples of buying a house. Oh my gosh, that was one of the most difficult things I've ever had to do. Getting married was easier than buying a house. In terms of all the decision making that had to go into all the evaluations, all the cost benefit analysis, for lack of a better term. This neighborhood versus that neighborhood, this amenity versus that amenity. Oh my gosh, I never want to go through that again. But at the same time, I don't want to live in the same house for like the rest of my life. I eventually want to try out other places, but I'm not looking forward to that whole process again. That was brutal.
No. I know. I've seen lists of like what are some of the most stressful things that people experience in, you know, modern society, first world kind of thing. And yeah, buying a house is one of them. So, weird arcane process. Anyway.
I would imagine that the thinking process that we would use for anything that we do in our creative projects, and let's go back to your creative coat of arms, right? So if you can, I know you can recite it because I can't. Your creative coat of arms.
Sure. So this is not my exact mission, but this is these kinds of questions. I treat these four items as questions to help me come up with answers, right? That become more of a direct goal and strategy kind of thing. So it is, I want to do what I love for a community I care about, utilizing tools and methods I believe in to engage in a sustainable trade.
Okay. So you love to draw and make music, yes?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I've got this great idea. For a comic, it's Little Orphan Annie slasher fiction, and I wanted to have like a big operatic soundtrack. It's gonna be a motion comic, a little bit of animation, a little bit of like the cool interactivity that the kids like nowadays. And maybe just a touch of pornography, if you can fit that in. Fit in a little bit of a slip here and there, like some article clothing, and she's getting out of the car, you know, that kind of thing. And there's a lot of money in it for you. And I guarantee that all of your existing audience is going to love it, because we're going to market the heck out of this. So, okay.
So running into opportunities, right? Yeah. They're all over the place, especially if you're starting, you know, or have been traditionally looking for interesting things and trying to drum them up and embrace them when they come up.
It's a lot of money, Rob. It's a lot of money I'm putting in front of you.
That sounds like a very interesting opportunity. This would be a very small spreadsheet for me.
Okay, so when you say you use a spreadsheet, what are you talking about? I mean,
okay. We've already been talking a little bit about sort of framing things up that you run into. And it could be, you know, big life situations, events that we all run into. Big choices. And sometimes that can be, we're human and we're prone to having all aspects of our humanness affect the things that we choose. And, you know, so you mentioned the example of, some folks that, you know, they may find certain things really extra convincing, like, maybe getting a little bit talked into that this car that they want is very scarce and it's going to go away, and then trying to get them to experience aspects of it where they will experience fear of loss, right?
Yeah.
This car that you like this car already. You can see yourself in it. You're ready to go. I know you are. You this is practically your car. Oh, except it's not. And I know there's someone else interested. What's funny is they try to pull all this stuff on me too or whatever. Yeah. And I am probably the worst person to market to that I've met. One of the worst. Because I'll reflect back whatever someone's trying to do, the technique they're trying to do. And I say, let's move on past this. And then I start trying to map to like probably whatever spreadsheet I'm currently using, which isn't like some robotic set of instructions or whatever that I will exactly follow. But what I find that it helps me do is it helps me get outside of my head and look at this from another interesting angle, that whatever this might be, like figuring out, okay, so let's pick on the car example.
Sure.
All right. I am not a work on my car in the driveway guy. I love driving a car that is somehow affordable yet safe, yet I don't hate to look at, right?
Yeah.
And I have a young daughter that, well, in the car that I have had until, you know, for 13 years until the recent weekend, it was quite the contortion act where it's like, okay, this car represents a different lifestyle and all that, whatever. But what's interesting is I still have similar interests. So how do I somehow factor in these new things? What are these new things? What cars out there meet the needs of these new things? Anyway, so I started to do research on it and come up with what's the price I feel like paying? What are some options available in there? And I started listing them out in a simple spreadsheet, and then coming up with, well, I think I've got sort of these like a sedan kind of car scenario, and I've got like a compact scenario, and I've got sort of the I don't know what to call it, the modern mutant station wagon thing.
Oh yeah, they look like SUVs that have been kind of smooshed and kind of like pressed down a little bit.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So it was a puzzle. And like what's interesting is this one was I had so many preferences and whatnot that my spreadsheet didn't like, you know, save the day or whatnot, but it helped me know like the four key things I was looking for. It got me more familiar with, okay, it's got to be four doors. It's going to be a sedan, and it's not going to be something that I don't mind looking at, and et cetera. What was the other one? Anyway. Oh, and then in the price range. And that helped a ton because it filtered out all these other scenarios that were just obviously not in my interests. Mm-hmm. But so I don't know if that was that I don't know, illuminating or anything, right? I mean,
well, I'm tempted to go on and like continue to use this as an analogy, but the only thing that's making me hesitate is like I worry that this is going to get a little too much into like the whole like, I don't want this to sound advicey.
Oh yeah, exactly.
But it's because like one of the things that I often like a drum I like to beat on is, look, if you're new to creative storytelling, if you are just getting started in this thing, just make some mini comics, fool around, and you're going to figure out what you want out of it. Some of it has to be sort of like a tactile kind of thing, like just a feeling it out with your hands while you do it. But then it comes to, you know, like really pulling the trigger on something like, oh, I want to do something big. I want to do something I want to commit to. And I can only go back to my own experiences. And I think about like 12 years ago when I was prepping myself to do a long form webcomic. And I had to sit down and say, what do I want out of this thing? You know, this is going to be several years of my life and this is going to be a lot of work. Let's try to narrow down, you know? So I do a lot of preliminary writing, sort of asking myself, interviewing myself about what the characters are and what the world is and what I'm ultimately trying to get at with it. And I start with like a thematic kind of idea, which can mutate. Nothing is formalized as a spreadsheet, but I think the analogy holds that, you know, when you go to a car lot, and if you really walk in without any kind of preconceived notion of really what you're after, there's a lot of different things to choose from on there, right?
Oh, yeah.
The last time I went car shopping was, again, 12 years ago. I'm not looking forward to that either. I'm putting that off as long as I can. My car has to literally fall apart before you're still going to drag me kicking and screaming onto those lots because you just having gone through this, I'm sure you can sympathize with how tired and how aggravating it is to go through that whole experience of purchasing a car too.
Well, it's because someone's actually pulling on the opposite angle of, well, it's interesting. It is even though it's kind of a simple example of a scenario. But it's interesting in that if you haven't expressed those key ideas, those attributes that you are desiring and that will meet that fulfill the scenario you're trying to build, right? Mm-hmm. Someone else is totally going to fill in that blank and be actively advocating it and trying to work on, work from an irrational and emotional angle, which isn't bad. I mean, it's awesome to make art out of your gut and your emotion. Have at it, right? But at the same time, it's not some art you need to actually, you know, contemplate like which project do you want to throw all that emotion at?
Yeah. Yeah. And how can you put words to what emotions that you're even trying to muster here? Right.
Well, you put it really well, like the idea of interviewing yourself.
Yeah.
That's the commonality among these processes. So you may have a very structured way of doing it or a more, journalistic way of doing it where maybe you're not looking for these things that you can compare as in a spreadsheet, but they're both interviewing.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I guess you're right. Cause yeah, in order to actually do like a breakdown on a spreadsheet of what are the things that I want out of this, that is forming, it's an interview where you're just filling in the blanks, rather than writing out the questions.
And inventing the blanks too.
That's what I'm saying. I didn't mean to make it sound dismissive or that you're doing something easier. It's actually it's very, very complex, right? Because you're formulating the questions and you're creating the slots to put the answers. I just saw, oh man, I got mad, Rob. I got really mad when I was watching the news. I do this self-torture thing every once in a while where I watch like broadcast network news every once in a while. Yeah.
My eyes went very large.
Yeah. I shouldn't do that. I think this is my, what would you call it? like the thing you do intentionally to rile yourself up, just to getting mad at the TV for a half hour. You know, it's like, why are you watching Leno? You know how much you hate that guy. I know, but for some reason, I feel good about hating that guy. That kind of thing.
Sure.
I feel kind of dirty even admitting this now. But anyway, you know, they had this piece on where this woman is talking about the student loans situation and how more students are leaving school with more and more student loan debt, and they're getting lower and lower paying jobs upon leaving school. And this is reaching crisis situation. And as a guy who's burdened with some student debt to this day, I totally would love to see student debt reform. You'll get no argument from me. But what's their answer to it? They bring in this expert who says that, well, the situation is that you have to know before you even enter college what you want to be doing for a living, and you have to have a clear understanding before you even enter college of how much money you're going to be making if you work at that job, and then you have to borrow accordingly. Don't borrow anything more than your first year's salary upon leaving college, and don't deviate. Take the absolute minimum necessary in order to get the degree so you can get that specific job. Now, okay, you're putting this on an 18-year-old kid's head. You're 18. Do you know anything yet? Do you know anything about what you want out of life yet? Maybe you have an idea of what you want out of life yet, right? It's like, I knew I wanted to be a cartoonist, but I didn't know what that meant. I didn't know when I was 18, it was you worked for Marvel, and that's what I was going to do after all. I'm going to do some of my own comics, and I'll get noticed, and then I'll work for Marvel. Man, it's so not where I am now. Anyway, I was just foaming at the mouth of this woman who's pushing this just rigid, idiotic, non-useful advice. Plan your life. Put it on a schedule and put everything in little slots, and then you'll protect yourself from catastrophe. Don't allow yourself the ability to change course or decide that you want to do something else. Like, oh, I didn't know until I took this humanities class that I was really interested in art. Now I want to do that. Nope, you don't get to. You said you're going to be a CPA. You got to finish this course, and then you got to get your first year salary to match whatever you borrowed from your student loans. It's just on the schedule. That's all. You know, I don't want anybody to think that spreadsheeting is that, right?
Holy crap, it's not that.
Oh, my gosh.
No, I mean, it's you can have a relationship with it that is exactly what you described, but I would say, I hope you don't have that kind of relationship with it, because you'll find out that, what you're doing is you're getting a sort of putting up a mirror that reflects how you are looking at the problem. And it's going to help you revise and expound and maybe discover new nooks and crannies and things about the problem, which inherently means that you're not operating under that rigid approach. It has a looseness to it, but it has a little bit of structure to it, which is where you get to do some cool things that you can start to compare stuff and come up with ways of measuring this sort of structured journal that, well, you wouldn't have that if you were just sort of noodling on it and just, you know, doodling or imagining and thinking. That is awesome and powerful too. I'm not trying to, you know, prescribe either neither is a be all end all. It's just that I've noticed, like, habitually, I've used the heck out of spreadsheets to do a lot of creative things.
Well, and brainstorming this, maybe we can get into some of the specific examples of the kinds of things you brainstorm when you're doing this. But like, sometimes doing this can lead to surprises that you didn't expect by creating that kind of a focused way of approaching how to make a big decision. You could be surprised at what you really want out of something. Like, for instance, I don't think this is weird to give this away. I drive a pickup truck, and there was a very specific reason we landed on that. The salesman tried to talk us out of it. He said, "Look, you guys just got married. You're gonna be having kids." To which we were like, "Uh-uh." He's like, "And you really want a lease and all this other stuff?" And we're like, "No, we want a pickup truck." And it's because when we sat down to do our list of what do we want out of a car, we did the typical things: good gas mileage, you know, dependable, good reputation, side impact safety, all the dumb normal stuff you do. Yeah. But then all of a sudden, when we were thinking about it, we're like, okay, what kind of subjective things do we want out of this car? What kind of, and you know, I was writing out dumb stuff like must exist as a transformer. You know, I was like, oh, it'd be so cool to get like a Toyota van because that's what Ironhide was. And Ann's like, no, we're not driving a van because vans are where murderers live. And that was a surprise. You know, she's like, we're not getting a murder van. And then also like things like, you know, like irrational things like, well, we don't want to get anything with a trunk because somebody could put you in a trunk. Hatchback's okay, but trunks, no. That was a surprise. And then this is the one that really surprised me. It was like, you know, I don't want to have to be the guy to give people rides. I don't want anybody to call on me to say, can you give me a ride to this place? Wouldn't it be convenient if we only had a 2-seat car? So it's just me and you. And we, if somebody says, can you give me a ride? Nope, can't. Shrug your shoulders. We only got a 2-seat car. You know, that was a completely irrational, dumb side issue that once I thought about, I was like, yeah, that would be really great. That was one of the big reasons that I really pushed for a pickup truck. I was like, wow, look, now we got all this bed space. We can move. Like if we have to move, we can move real easy, but we never have to give anybody a ride if we don't want to.
And that's cool. You get to highlight aspects of whatever decision that all of a sudden it just makes choice among whatever options you're trying to evaluate more clear.
And those were not robotic responses to the situation, right? That was completely subjective, completely almost borderline irrational. Are vans the nesting ground of all murderers? No. But that's our particular idiosyncrasy is that we have an irrational fear of vans. So we're not getting a van. Anyway. That's cool.
Oh, yeah. And it's completely irrational of me to be like, I don't know what it is. Like my other car I bought, what is this? This is a fallacy. It's one of the logical fallacies, which that we should totally link to that on the show notes page. The Wikipedia list of logical fallacies. It's awesome reading. And this is I think it's like a transitive one or whatever, because basically I had a hunch. I was at a Subaru dealer on purpose, but when I came across my car in 1999, all of a sudden I realized, well, I get to, and I realized this when I was test driving it, that this car was in Gran Turismo. So the video game, Gran Turismo. I'm like, let's see. My car is in Gran Turismo. Uh-huh. I'm in my car, therefore I'm in Gran Turismo.
Oh, so it's like the whole like all men are mortal. Socrates was mortal. All men are Socrates. That kind of thing.
Yes. Yep. Anyway.
Hey, you get no argument from me. I mean, yeah. If I was my midlife crisis car is probably gonna be, you know, like a 1968 VW Beetle yellow, you know. And the whole time, I'm going to be like, I'm driving Bumblebee, you know.
So having, that's what I think is very playful. It's like using different sides of your, your intention and your creativity where that sounds like fruity and flowery to just start throwing these words out on a podcast. But like it's good to not try it's like you're only using half your muscles, right? To accomplish something where you can be structured and you can be creative, and they can inform one another where you're like, no, wait, this thing I was writing down all these notes in the spreadsheet and it adds up to a certain way. I way disagree with that because of this other factor that all of a sudden I feel now.
Yeah. Well, I'm something I don't share all that often on these different audio things is I've had a lot of failed projects, like that some ones that I didn't even make noise about in like over the last 3 years, 4 or 5 years actually. I had a lot of projects that I got into a conversation with somebody. We both got excited about it. Like, yeah, we should totally do this. No, we should do this. And then we get like 3-4 weeks into talking and deciding and planning about it. And it just falls off the map. Like both of us at the same time will just be like, oh man, we got to get to that. And then we just stop working on it altogether. And it just turns out that it turned out to be a lot more work or a lot different kind of work than what we had anticipated. But it started with that whimsical kind of creative thing, like looking at the car going Gran Turismo car, or looking at the car going Transformer, looking at the car and saying, I love the color. But we didn't sit down and say, well, what's the interior like? What's the track record on this thing? Like how much gas mileage is going to get? Does this company have like a history of a lot of recalls or anything like that? Right. And so mm-hmm. I've, And it's not even a situation where we always just kind of all lost interest. It's been something where, like, we engage on this kind of mutual enthusiasm for what we're doing individually. And then we say, let's do it together. And then as soon as we start getting a little bit embroiled together, because we didn't stop and look at, you know, we didn't create a spreadsheet. We didn't create like a list of pros and cons. We didn't step back and look at what does this agreement ultimately mean? We find out as soon as we get embroiled in something that, whoa, we disagree on some really key points, some big points, like fundamental things that, you know, when we back away from each other, it's like, but we agree on a lot of stuff. But as soon as we get down to that core of doing something, working on a creative project together, it's like, wow, we couldn't disagree more on this. And it's not angry. It's an amicable split. But it's just like, whoa, I didn't know this about us, that we, you know, don't see eye to eye. Had we stopped and looked more critically at what the other was doing before we engaged in that, before we did that vigorous handshake of awesome, let's do a thing, we could have saved ourselves a lot of effort, right?
Yeah.
So I want to go through this list of examples that you have, because I think this is a really good list of examples.
Well, cool. There was actually, let's see.
Or do you want to back up to doing like the reality check?
We can totally jump around. Now you mentioned reality check. So I love I don't think the book Rework is pretty cool. I mean, so you've got the guys at 37 Signals, right? Mm-hmm. That created a book that encapsulates sort of their approach.
It reads very much like books like The Tao Te Ching, where it's a collection of like one page essays that poetically summarize their position. Yeah,
exactly. And some sometimes accompanied with an interesting illustrations and whatnot. That one of the cool thoughts that that really sticks with me from that book is that they talk about planning is guessing. I think that's a little harsh, because I'm a proponent of, if somehow I could access all my experience all at once with complete clarity, and I continue to grow and nurture that experience, I've somehow gained or have the potential of having wisdom, right? Mm-hmm. And that seemed desirable to me.
Yeah.
As opposed to, why the heck would you care about that? Well, the reason I find it desirable is to try to apply it in context.
No, it's so you can lord it around all the kids.
Exactly. I know what you're going to do. Yeah, that's really fun when teachers do that. Not really. But let's see.
But yeah,
I have some experience in that with being the long hair in all the advanced geeky classes as a lad in high school, with wearing the Iron Man shirts and whatnot. But yeah, so those teachers, their planning was not wisdom based. It was definitely guessing. We're not trying to interpret that kind of thing. And there is an element of like, you don't know the complexities, and you don't know what you don't know and all that kind of stuff. But it's better. So it's a reality check for planning, like doing the most like detailed, like you may fall in love with a spreadsheet. Yeah, and go wild with coming up with more and more attributes that help frame up that, and you're discovering more about this topic. Like for me, actually, a cautionary one for me would be like the getting a house. That I never did it before, and I wanted to feel like I was making the right choice. But I wanted to discover that right choice and not be told what it is and whatnot. So I, you know, my wife and I, and I think this might've been one of the first times she really sort of indulged, and she dove in with this, with both feet into this spreadsheeting thing with me. And holy moly, we went through many generations of that thing and we went, you know, touring many houses and whatnot. And honestly, when it came down to when we finally chose one, I honestly don't know if it really helped that much, and it was kind of a distraction. So I don't know it was a distraction in that maybe we didn't know enough. So we were sort of not reality based with it.
Okay. Yeah. Good point. Good point. I faced the exact same thing when I was house hunting, is that Ann and I thought we wanted one thing, but because we hadn't ever shopped for homes before, we didn't know until we actually got in and looked at these places what we were asking for. And then we had to, and it, thank God we had a really great realtor who knew how to read us and go, you guys are saying you want this, but I think you want this. And then she showed us the other, and we were like, oh yeah, this is what we wanted. We didn't even realize it, right? So it's like we didn't have enough data to even begin doing like a useful, you know, pro-con list or a series of fields of what we were looking for and how to measure what we're looking at.
And I would say that my wife and I were not we were in a similar situation that we didn't know enough about it. We were starting to learn some things about it, but just getting caught up into certain details that maybe weren't as important.
Yeah.
But even then, I wouldn't throw out that experience. I mean, I thought doing that, thinking about it, was helpful. It's just, but not every spreadsheet's going to, you know, be that.
Well, you could look at it as that experience and what you walked away from it is going to give you a much better experience when you have to do it again, right? Like any learning experience, like doing anything for the first time, you riding a bike and scraping your knee, or, you know, falling down when you're trying something difficult, you won't do that as readily next time. It's dumb as that. Oh God, I'm starting to sound like I'm grandpa with all my platitudes today.
The onion belt.
Which was the style at the time.
I don't think that was very onion belt, which is a Grandpa Simpson reference, of course. Let's see. Okay, to get specific. So what's the spread? What's one of these things look like? You come up with, for the house, it was, you have a list of rows, which are specific houses, but it's these columns. That's the really key thing where you start every column you add is sort of a thing you want to consider or observe on that list of stuff. So you could be creating a list of, here's an interesting one. So Brett Terpstra of Apple community fame has assembled this list of the many, many, many iOS text editors, which of course for iOS, you've got both the tablet form factor and the phone form factor. And then he came up with tons of attributes. So if you look at that list, I mean, that's a great example of someone thinking about, well, what would I care about looking at for all these items?
We'll link to this in the show notes.
And so, yeah, for a house, it was, you know, how many bedrooms and all that kind of stuff. You know, how we felt. And here's the other key thing. It's not just numeric attributes about that thing. Here's where this leaps from just creating your own database describing stuff into creating more of a journal thing of adding your preference, where you're sort of voting on everything you add. And so you come up with attributes that are just for you to vote on, where you get to say, how did I feel in that house I toured? Did I feel one? Did I feel five? And how did I, what did I think about the trees in the neighborhood, one to five or whatever? And just come up with these attributes, but also this, and honestly, it's a kind of an emotional number, but all of a sudden you're collecting a whole pile of these emotional numbers mm-hmm. that start to tell a story.
Yeah.
And one of the, and I don't know if this is for good or ill. I think overall this was for good, but another example that, a place where I worked for quite a few years, I was part of the interview process for new technologists coming in. Right. And I noticed, holy moly, all of us have a way different process of doing this. And we're trying to have conversations about all these different candidates that are coming in. And I mean, it really doesn't sound like a smart conversation. Like, boy, this is a group of experts really talking about some people, interesting people they met in with lots of great observations. We did not sound so smart. I don't know how to put it without going into too much detail or whatnot. So anyway, I brought up, I started to brainstorm, like, what are some of the things that we're trying to get at with this? And I came up with a list of attributes and categorized them, like as far as how people fit with us, with the group culturally, and the technology skills with this area and that area. And it, I broke it down into a list of about 30 attributes and said, here you go. Quickly rank these things, and then we'll talk about it after you rank them.
Mm. Yeah, that jives very well with going back to the house analogy. That's exactly what Ann and I wound up having to do when we were having trouble deciding between a couple places. Was we, like you said, you know, we said, like, well, how did we feel about the neighborhood? How did we feel about the interior? How did we feel about the location, the distance from work, kind of thing? And it was really surprising to, like, break it down that way and start doing, like, a 1 to 5. We did, like, smiley face to sad face scale is what we did.
That's awesome.
So, yeah, there was this one place that backed to a preserve, you know, like the backyard was Endor. And we saw the backyard. We're like, oh my God, this is amazing. It'd be so awesome. There'd be, you know, deer coming up and eating breakfast with us every day. But the inside of that place was not optimal. And it was 20 miles out of town, you know? So it's like it had that one great thing with a big smiley face, but then all these little sad faces where we knew, okay, this one's going off the list, no matter how good we felt about that yard, you know?
There are times. There's other things that this is when one of the times I love it, it's when you start breaking your own rules and you're like, I put one smiley face in all sad faces and I don't care.
Yeah.
I know that I want that one now. I like, it's like, this is the right instance of this smiley face. It just hacked the whole system.
Yeah.
It wins. You know, that has happened. So, Yeah, buying cars.
That goes back to the truck, right? It's like the truck didn't get as good gas mileage as some of the other cars. It didn't have as good a side impact rating as some other cars that we were looking at. You know, style wise, it wasn't as pretty as, say, like a Volkswagen Jetta or something like that. You know, but when that one big smiley face was, I don't have to give people rides.
That's like, so funny.
I'm going to push hard for that because that, you know, that seems stupid, but that's important to me right now in this part of my life.
And so I think the activity you're doing there is this kind of, it is a super creative activity in my opinion, because it's a little bit of role playing and it's a little bit of scenario imagining, and you're comparing these options, not just as like this raw thing. It's almost like your intention, your goals, and all this other stuff that forms like a bigger picture, like a scenario about that thing, and or story. Are you comparing different stories to one another? Which one do you enjoy the most, right? And so in the end, you're always separate from this thing where it doesn't tell you a final decision on anything. But I think it's interesting, and what it can do is tell you how you're looking at it. And then you look at yourself looking at it.
Yeah. No, you're right. You're right. It's like imagining, again, to go back to creative projects, it's like, I'm going to do this long form web comic, and that's going to take a lot of preparation. I'm going to have to imagine. And this is one thing I'm going to give myself credit for. I don't give myself credit for a lot of things, but this one I will give myself credit for, is that I had the foresight to sit down and go, what will my life look like doing a page a week for 3 to 4 years?
Mm.
What will my life look like if I'm going to commit to that? Because if I commit to this, I'm not going to back down. I want to see this thing through to the end, and I don't want to wimp out in front of the whole world. Not that anybody was watching. So in order to, once I had visualized that, I said, that's going to be tough. I'm taking 2 months off from drawing. And I did. And all I did was drink screwdrivers and play Metroid every night after work. And I did that for 2 months, and it was a glorious 2 months of just sloth, you know, because I was saying, like, enjoy this moment, because after this, it's going to be a rough slog for 3 years. Now, I also envisioned other scenarios where, well, what would happen if I took this to a publisher? I had a good relationship with Antarctic Press at the time. I probably could have gotten the book picked up there. I imagine, okay, now I'm going to do this thing as a monthly. I'm going to try to keep this on a monthly schedule. I'm going to be worried about sales. Webcomic means that it's a longer slog, but it's a more manageable slog. Publisher means that I'm going to have to crank through this thing really fast. I might have to cut some corners, and I'm going to be jeopardizing my health working a day job while also doing this, right?
Mm. Yeah.
So yeah, you know, you sit down and you visualize yourself in both those scenarios and start that smiley face chart, or that smiley face, what would you call that? Spectrum.
Yeah. Yeah. That's, that is cool. Exactly. And what's funny is you don't even have to, basically you're doing some kind of grid, right? And so, yeah, you could just, you could do the consumer reports dots, you could do smiley faces, you could do favorite animal to least favorite animal, whatever.
I like that one. I think I'm going to start incorporating that. I'm going to favorite animal to least favorite animal.
And that way, well, then you get, maybe you have like primal reactions where all of a sudden you see like a rabid mongoose on, you know, item number 5 on your creative project list. And you're like, no, I am don't so, go near that.
I'm so afraid of monkeys. So monkeys. Afraid. Oh yeah. Man, that would be on my least favorite. Yeah. So it'd be like monkeys. And then I don't know what my favorite animal is. Boy, you just pitched a really tough question at me, Rob. I haven't thought about this since I was a kid. What's my favorite animal? I like hippos a lot. But oh man, you know, cats are pretty cool too, like the big wild cats.
Bunny rabbits.
I can take them or leave them. They'd okay. be middle of the scale.
Bunny rabbit. Yep, that's so neutral.
Yeah, just kinda
flatlined bunny rabbit. I could see that being a wonderful ranking system.
Possums are terrifying. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Anyway, sorry, I didn't mean to go off on that jag. You know what, Rob? There's a lot more in your notes here, and I'm coming up on my breaking
yeah,
point where
I realize
I
that.
You want to do this as a two-parter, because I think there's a lot more really good stuff in here.
I think. Well, let's wing it and let's see what we can bookmark this, and maybe we'll come back to it, because I do
think
the
billable time fallacy though.
You want to know about the billable time fallacy?
That's tempting.
Oh, dude, how tempted are you?
I don't want to truncate it. I don't want it to be a 5-minute thing. I want to dig deep into it. So
I'll just to tease it. That's about me causing trouble with my spreadsheeting way of capturing data and reflecting it back to my team. Anyway, and we'll go into that at some other time. That's spreadsheets are thinking in a way that is gathering these measurable attributes on comparing situations. A story comes out of it, and I find it to be, it's not some geeky, like only for accountant thing, like for the straights, the not creatives. Mm-hmm. Because I think you can put yourself in a situation where all of a sudden you find that perfect emotional button, or you find the perfect rational thing.
You just put a magnifying glass over one tiny example of something we covered in the Jack of All Dilettantes episode.
Mm.
You know, where we said, like, look, if you're doing any creative endeavor, and especially if you're an independent creator, which more and more people are nowadays, if you're an independent contractor or a freelancer, or, you know, you're trying to be a self-publisher, whatever, this is the kind of stuff you got to have to think about. On top of whether it's a big panel, small panel, smooth line, rough line, tones, colors, print, you know, aspect ratio, print production values, and all the other stuff. So. Mm. This is a good case study on one specific aspect, but I think it. What's to stop us from doing a two-parter? We get to do that. It's our show.
Okay, cool. We'll dig into it more. I'd be curious to hear what people think. I mean, when do you end up using the? I know a lot of friends who do use this, but they aren't that vocal about it. You know, it's like they're ashamed. Well,
everyone step forward and confess. Okay. People can email us at leanintoart@gmail.com, or even better, they can at tweet us. I'm at Jersey, JERZY on Twitter. Rob is Rob Stenzinger. We both got Z's, which means that we're pretty cool and ethnic. Rob Stenzinger, Jersey. I got 2 Z's though, so I got double the ethnicity.
Very nice.
But my Twitter handle only has one, J-E-R-Z-Y, Rob Stenzinger on Twitter. At tweet us and let us know what's your favorite, what would you call this? Spectrum range of measurement of...
Yeah, how do you compare scenarios, basically, like when you're trying to, when you're weighing out stuff like that? And as I've done very recently too, figuring out like, well, which creative projects are going to be floating to the top and all that kind of stuff. And I talked about that in a recent Polytechnicast where I talk about how, you know, the metaphor of juggling and whatnot, but it's not just, you know, juggling that's informing that choice. It's doing these, you know, envisioning scenarios and then picking, like, obviously you could, picking a major, picking, there's so many things that are worth that kind of scrutiny. I know a lot of people do it. And it would be great to hear, like, using grid paper, voting in hats. I don't know. I'd be curious to find out.
Dreaming matches with your spouse. That happens too.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. You know, it leads to this idea that we don't come out fully formed, and that's a good thing. Even when you know what you want to do for the rest of your life when you're a kid, that doesn't mean that you know how to get there, or even if that's really where you want to go. What is that, Dororo?
I'm holding the back of Dororo, which I just finished volume one.
Oh, cool.
Nobody is born whole.
Yeah. And that is like, well, I mean, the whole concept of the premise of the book is about a baby born without arms, legs, or even eyes and a mouth.
Missing 48 parts.
They were sold to demons by his father.
What a jerk.
Well, as you can imagine, when you get to like page 1600 of that series, the final confrontation does happen with Daddy. But yeah, that's a great book. And yeah, nobody's born whole. That's a lovely idea. Osamu Tezuka, he writes beautiful stuff. Or wrote beautiful stuff. The man's not here anymore. But... anyway, okay. Well, at tweet us or send us an email or we've been getting some voicemail messages, people sending us MP3s over the emails, and we're gonna put some of those in the show too. So,
yeah, we super appreciate it. And the comments on the blog posts for those that actually have logins at leanintoart.com, super appreciate those too. It's awesome. And yeah, we've got more to share on that topic as well, but I don't want to keep opening up cans of worms. I don't have enough spreadsheets to keep track of our conversation.
All right. Oh man, I got a big day tomorrow, so I'm gonna hit the hay. But Rob, thank you for this. This was fun, and I'm looking forward to part two. So.
All right. Cool. Me too, Jersey.
All right, so thanks everybody for downloading and listening. And until next time, I have been Jersey Drozd of comicsaregreat.com, leanintoart.com, and Jersey on Twitter.
And I've been Rob Stenzinger of interactive-storyteller.com and leanintoart.com, and Rob Stenzinger on Twitter.
Okay, bye.
Show notes for this episode can be found at leanintoart.com. You can also follow us on Twitter at the user leanintoart, and you can reach us via email at leanintoart@gmail.com. And remember, leaners aren't wieners. Thanks for listening.